I'm Michael.
I'm Radek.
And this is The Podcast.
A sounding board for interesting ideas and insights. We discuss books you read and want to share with you.
As well as technology and productivity, which is what we do by day working on our app, Nosby.
Or whatever else comes to mind.
Yeah. And a book comes to mind. And this book is about our mind where it's relaxed.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll talk about the book Sleep Smarter by the author...
Sean Stevenson.
Yeah, exactly. And well, I read the book, recommended... Who recommended this book to me? Ah, I know. 5 a.m. Miracle, Jeff Sanders. Yeah, Jeff, a friend of the show, fellow podcaster. Jeff, I heard his interview with the author of this book on his podcast. And I loved the interview so much, and I wanted to read the book anyway because I had some doubts about how I perform sleeping, let's say. Mm-hmm. And I read the book, and then I recommended it to you.
Yeah, that's right. I was quite skeptical at first because I thought, well, I did get consistent about going to sleep and waking up. I sleep 8 hours a day. I don't have problems falling asleep very often, so what is there to learn anymore? But I quite enjoyed the book, I have to say. There's things I've learned.
Yeah, so what you were just saying is basically when you recommended, you know, to me Deep Work. Mm-hmm. I was like, Deep Work, yeah, you have to focus on your work and just do it, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. So yeah, there's more nuance to it, but apart from nuance, the author is a fantastic orator. I mean, like, you know, when you listen to his podcast, I've listened to a few of his episodes, and when you listen to him speaking, like telling you the book, like,
yes,
reading you the book, it's just fantastic. He's like this homey guy, this, like, you know, this yo guy who's just like your buddy. Like, you're just basically talking to your body or listening to your body. It's a fantastic. Like, I got this. I really liked it.
Yeah, me too. I also enjoyed the narration of his book. So obviously we both read the audio version of it. And, you know, it's almost always really good when the author is the narrator. Sometimes it isn't when someone isn't a good narrator at all. But Sean is. And also, you know, the book has a bunch of, like, his humor, and read by someone else, it wouldn't make any sense. So it was a good read, and it wasn't a very long book either. It was like 5 hours or so.
Yeah, but apart from the fact that the book made us feel good, I mean, the author, you know, made us feel good as being the buddy and nice, you know, voice and everything. I think it was one of the like few books when I was reading it, like listening to it, and I just felt so bad. Like, I felt so, like, really bad. And because like, I've been doing so many things wrong with my sleep. So many things. I didn't know that, you know? I was, mm-hmm. like, ignorance is bliss, man. I mean, I didn't know that I was doing so many things wrong. And really, I felt bad when I was reading it. And now, after I've read it, after I've, you know, I took my notes and everything, and I started applying the learnings from the book, it's hard for me to not, like, to not try to obey by the book, really. I just I feel like whenever I do something, you know, incorrect, like, wrong again, like, we'll get to the details now, but if I do it, like, in the evenings or something like that, then I'm like, no, I should stop now. I mean, Sean wouldn't be proud of myself right now. I have this imperative, but the imperative to do good is because I, like, the author really made it clear how important it is for us to sleep well. And
yeah.
And it's not like I'm doing wrong to him. I'm doing wrong to my body. And mm-hmm. if I don't follow his advice. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think the biggest kind of meta takeaway is that I didn't quite realize how many factors affect the quality of sleep. Because here's the thing, I mean, I thought it doesn't apply to me because if I don't have problems falling asleep, which I know many people do, then, like, what is there to learn? I mean, sleep more. I am sleeping 8 hours a day. That's not a problem. But the thing is that, like, even though it's obviously better to sleep 8 hours a day than 4 hours a day, you can still get very different results in the long term depending on how well you sleep. Because like you can wake up in the middle of the night, you can have, you know, interrupted sleep, or your body sometimes like won't quite go into the deep phases of sleep, and you just won't get the same relaxing effect of sleep. So those tips, many of them had to do with you know, how easy it is to fall asleep, and that's important, but also many of them are about, you know, once you fall asleep, is the sleep actually good, or like is it truly the best sleep you can get?
Yeah, and what is also good, I mean, what was also helpful for me was that the author is very, like what he's saying is pretty much aligned as what we learned from the book about diets, like from how we get fat, and other, you know, books about it, where he's talking about, you know, about not only fats and calories, but he's talking about the hormones, like, you know, balance of your hormones, balance of your body. And I wasn't aware, like, for example, with caffeine, like how I was producing imbalance, which would later result or impact the quality of my sleep.
Mm-hmm. So that's also interesting. So he said, you know, three important components to health would be nutrition, movement or exercise, and sleep. And that makes a lot of sense. But what I guess I didn't quite internalize is how linked the three are to one another.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the link between nutrition and exercise seems you know, pretty obvious to people. But it's also true that exercise affects sleep, and nutrition affects sleep, and sleep affects exercise, like how well you you'll be able to exercise, and how good results you'll get with your nutrition. So the three are interlinked. And in addition to that, like, I don't know, I was already convinced before that sleep not only has tremendous effects on the general sense of well-being and productivity, and possibly even, you know, just long-term health overall.
Yeah, I like a small story. A friend of mine has a friend, and he was always telling me that this friend decided not to sleep long. He decided that he only needs 4 hours a day to sleep, and he doesn't want to waste any more of the waking, you know, day waking hours. So he would just sleep 4 hours, and it was great. And he would do it, and he did it for many years, and he's doing it, and it's great for him, and works great for him. I was surprised. I didn't think it would be like really important. But when I saw this guy, when I saw this friend of a friend, he is like older than me, but he looks so old. He like really so old. I could see that really he wasn't sleeping a lot, because he just looks older than he is. Like, you know, and of course, for some people, it's just the way the genes and whatever. But really, like, I could see the correlation between, you know, his short sleeping and the way he looks.
Mm. That's interesting. Mm. So why don't we jump into some practical tips, the most important ones we've learned from the book?
Yeah, just let's go with the exercise first. So because we just mentioned the exercise, for example.
Yeah.
I'm recently very much into closing all the activity rings. I'm really right now. I'm on a streak. It's going well. I'm really focused on closing all these activity rings. But because of that, sometimes in the evening I would not have it closed. So I would just do some workout, something to just close the activity ring. And I was so proud of myself. But then when I read the book, he said, no, you should do your exercise in the morning or in the, you know, afternoon, like or late afternoon, but not before going to sleep, because when you want to go to sleep, you should cool your body down. You should, you know, your body should be relaxed and cooled down. But the moment you do an exercise late in the evening, you're warming it up. So you won't be able to sleep well. And he was right, because every time I would do this, you know, last minute exercise just to close my activity rings, I would have trouble falling asleep.
Yeah, that was counterintuitive to me, because I had this notion in my mind that having some exertion in the evening makes it easier to fall asleep, which intuitively makes sense, because if you feel exerted, then you feel tired. If you feel tired, you fall asleep quickly. And there may be something to that, But what the author argued is that because exercise overheats our body, and we'll talk about the relationship between temperature and sleep in a moment, and also exercise, you know, because you're breaking down your body, you're producing a lot of stress hormones, which also makes it very difficult or more difficult to fall asleep. So it's best to work out in the morning, it seems, for best results overall. But, you know, at a minimum, you shouldn't have a workout later than 4 to 6 hours before sleep.
Yeah, and I liked how he put it, that when you're doing exercise, you're breaking your body, just what you said, breaking your body, so you need the sleep to, you know,
regenerate,
fix it again.
Yeah.
So that's why you need so much sleep, because otherwise you won't get it.
Yeah, so we've mentioned temperature, so maybe let's go with that.
Yeah.
So this is also has not been quite intuitive to me, because, you know, when you go to sleep, you put your blanket over, or maybe another one, and it's like, it's warm and cozy. And in general, that there's this idea that our bodies maintain a constant temperature, right? And it appears that in reality, like it fluctuates at night, especially. Our bodies get colder during sleep. They're supposed to. And if our bodies are too hot, it will be difficult to fall asleep. So the perfect temperature for sleep is 20 degrees Celsius or 68 Fahrenheit, which is colder than I thought. I mean, that's definitely cool for indoors, but that's actually the recommended temperature for falling asleep. So I suppose, like, even in the winter, like you'll try to keep the temperature warmer than 20 degrees Celsius generally. So, but even then, it will make sense to cool down the bedroom for falling asleep easier.
Yeah, I noticed this where we live now. It's pretty warm. So, for example, in summer, we put air conditioning at night, and this makes just everything better. Like, without air conditioning, we just can't fall asleep. Like, many people boast that they try to, you know, go asleep without air conditioning, but if it's just 30 degrees Celsius, so, like, you know, I don't know, 80 Fahrenheit, right?
No, more than that.
More than that, 90, 100.
Yeah, 90 or so.
Yeah. So anyway, it's if it's just, like, really warm outside, like, you should really cool down your bedroom. Like, the moment we put air conditioning, like, of course, the sound of air conditioning is also very, you know, calming, but just the cool air just makes it just really nice and really nice, cozy to just fall asleep.
Yeah, that's a problem. In Poland, there is really zero kind of culture, I suppose, of having air conditioning at home. Like, no one has air conditioning at home. And during summers, admittedly not that long summers, but during summers, this is difficult. And, you know, now that, you know, even though I thought, you know, warm and cozy for falling asleep, in the summer, it's obvious that when it's kind of hot, even at night, it is really hard to fall asleep. It's just too hot.
Exactly. Yeah. So another thing that for me was just, like, for my wife, it was always obvious, but for me, never. Like, my wife would always be very religious about having everything off, like, really dark bedroom. And I was like, really, does it really matter? Like, you know, a little bit light here, a little bit light there. Like, you know, whatever, right? You just close your eyes and it's dark, right? And apparently, all of our cells receive light, not just our eyes. So even if we close our eyes, you know, our body knows if it's light or if it's dark. And apparently, we should be really sleeping in the dark.
Yeah, and, you know, it's kind of difficult to make it fully dark without having, like, blackout curtains. And I'm honestly a bit skeptical about that point, because if you really, like, deliberately black out your bedroom, I mean, not just in, you know, not using devices and stuff, but just, like, try to not let in light from the outside, then it's not going to be light in the morning. And that's a problem for waking up. So I don't know about that. But the relationship between light and sleep goes further than that. it appears that it's important to get light exposure during the day, mm-hmm. as in, you know, when you stay indoors all day long, and you don't get proper exposure to sunlight, it's difficult for your body to regulate the circadian rhythm. So your body kind of has an internal 24-hour clock, and it's regulated primarily by light exposure. So we don't quite realize, because our eyes are really great at adjusting to different light levels. But even if you have lights on in a room, it's really very little light compared to sunlight, even on an overcast day. And so it's very important to get outside if possible, in the morning if possible, but even just, you know, having some exposure to light during the day, even like, you know, having a desk near a window or something like that, that's important for regulating your circadian rhythm and ultimately falling asleep easier.
Yeah, and if you don't work at a company like ours, where you can work from anywhere and where you can work from home and you can take a break in the middle of the day just to have a walk, mm-hmm. then basically in winter, what happens is that you leave home when it's dark and you come back home when it's dark.
Yeah, but then on the other hand, at night, you should really avoid excessive artificial light. Because like, again, then at night, it confuses our brains when you just have, you know, your lights on all the way. When it's dark outside, it's been dark for a few hours, and you know, soon you're going to go asleep. And that's a problem. So both the amount and the hue of light are important. And I've actually, like, just because it feels nicer, I've had a habit of just using like very gentle light, not all the bulbs on, but just like one bulb kind of shining at the wall to have this nice dispersed reddish light at night. And it's much nicer this way, and it doesn't confuse your brains into thinking it's the middle of the day, which again helps regulate the circadian rhythm.
Yeah, and right before going to sleep, it's important not to use the mobile phones, check social media and things like that, because the moment you start doing that, and this happened to me quite a few times, then you get excited. You get, you know, you get stimulated, and then when you get stimulated, it's hard to fall asleep because, you know, you're doing social media and everything. What is a good thing right now is already the new iOS, the new iPhones, for example, have this, the way of reducing the blue light.
It's called night shift.
Exactly, it's called night shift. So this way you just don't have to, like, it's easier on the eyes and everything, but still, with my wife, for example, we like to watch one episode of our favorite, you know, TV series before going to sleep. But and after reading this book, we decided, you know, let's watch something. But then after watching this, so instead of like talking about, you know, how our day went and then watching something and then going to sleep, we changed it. So now we watch one episode, and after we watch the episode, we close it, and then we talk about how our day went, and then by talking together, we just, you know, are getting tired, and we go falling asleep. So we try to limit our exposure to the screens after I've read the book.
Yeah, well, let's be honest here. Like, we're too addicted to just avoid devices when it's dark outside. But the point about night shift, I think, is really important. I'm glad Apple did this. And on the Mac, or on Windows, you should all be using Flux. And you should turn the option all the way to the right. Like, so for people who don't know, what it does is essentially it just turns the white balance all the way to yellow, essentially, and it looks kind of weird, but it makes it much easier to fall asleep, because the white on our devices are just like emit too much blue light, which confuses us, because that's the kind of light the sun emits, whereas like if you have you know, so for example, like people use like fire for light at night for a very long time, and it's a very reddish hue of light. And so like we're kind of tuned to that. And if you get a lot of bluish light, our brains think, oh, it's the day, right? But if you use your devices at night, and it's not necessarily like right in bed, but just late in the evening, if you turn the white balance to red part of the spectrum, it's just easier on the eyes, much easier.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as you said, it's hard to avoid screens, you know, in the evenings. But I found that, you know, I can, you know, try to tweak it to use them less a little bit than what I used to. And what about charging your stuff near the bed or like not near the bed? I mean, we already mentioned that you have your phone on the other side of the room anyway.
Well, yes. I mean, you should definitely not have your alarm clock within the reach of your hand. You should definitely not have it within the reach of your hand.
Yeah. So what we did, we moved because we have like a bedroom and we have a bathroom and suite bathroom. So like it's mm-hmm. connected to the bedroom. So we actually put all the charging stuff in the bathroom right now. So. Mm-hmm. So this way we are trying to avoid having, you know, the devices next to our beds. And it just makes sense. You know, you go there to brush your teeth before going to sleep. You put the devices to charge and you go to sleep. So it makes sense.
Let's talk about caffeine, though.
Yeah.
So
I decided to dial down caffeine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I used to start the day with a coffee and then have two more during the day. And having a coffee at 6 o'clock p.m. wouldn't be a yeah. problem for me. And I would always cheat, like tell myself that it's not a big deal. I still fall asleep nicely, so whatever. But yeah, the author of the book argues that the caffeine stays longer in our body than we think it does.
Yeah, yeah. The author said, if I remember correctly, that caffeine has a half-life of 6 to 8 hours in our bodies.
Yeah.
So that's definitely longer than I thought, because that, like, you don't feel the direct effects of that for this long. But what it suggests is that, like, if you go to sleep at 10 or around midnight, then you really shouldn't be drinking coffee after 2 p.m. Like, coffee is fine. Like, it's you know, it's helpful. It's a good invention, good drug, but the timing matters, because like not just the dosage. Like I think a lot of people overdose on caffeine, but no, they probably shouldn't. But timing matters too. Like if it's not just drinking late in the night, but even after 2 p.m. can just make it more difficult for you to fall asleep unnecessarily.
Yeah, and that's why I totally like changed the way I do it now. And I like my rooibos tea anyway, and this is a tea without taffeine, so without any effects. Yeah. So what I do, like at around 6 p.m., I like to have my like warm drink around 6 p.m., so I just do this tea. And also in the morning, I try to avoid coffee first thing. I drink water and then have some tea maybe. And then I have... So now I try to have just one cup of coffee a day. And yeah. This one cup of coffee, I'm really savoring it. It's just really just... my cup of coffee. Like today we had our meeting, Design Fight, and before that I was reading the everything that we prepared for it. So I just had my cup of coffee and it was a good one.
Yeah, me too. I also have so make sure to have some teas that are not high in caffeine, because exactly. I have to drink something all day long. It's compulsive, yeah. Right? But it doesn't have to be coffee, which I wouldn't do more than one or two per day, but sometimes I would do it later than I should. But I also, you know, knowing that coffee stays in our bodies for so long, I would also avoid black tea, even though it doesn't tend to be as rich in caffeine as coffee. But still, there's quite a lot of caffeine in black tea. So I would also try to avoid it after, you know, 2 or 3 p.m.
Yeah. So for me, like, it was a big change. Like, from three coffees, now we're just one, and then one that counts.
Three?
So really, yep.
Hmm. Well, what do you think about the suggestion to have this cycle of going on and off of coffee? Because it really, like, just out of my own experience, like, I thought for a long time that coffee, like, our bodies get addicted to caffeine very easily. Not in a very destructive way, but still such that it just stops having much of an effect. Our bodies just regulate to expect a certain dose of caffeine. So what the author suggested is to maybe cycle between, you know, 3 days on coffee and 2 days off coffee. So to kind of keep it, actually have a decent effect on your physiology, but like without... So kind of strike this balance between not using it every day, so it just stops having an effect, and not using it at all, in which case it also doesn't have any effect. What do you think about that?
I mean, to me, you know, it's like I did, for example, once, like, stop drinking coffee for 10 days, and I didn't feel like my body really missed it. You know, I just missed the ritual of having my coffee.
Yeah.
And that's why now, like, for me to change the change from three coffees to one coffee wasn't a big deal. I'm fine. I don't feel any cravings to coffee. So, and like, it's not really, I don't think it's a big deal. So I don't know. I just like drinking coffee. It just, you know, it's a thing, you know. That's why I'm savoring right now this one coffee that I have. I'm really savoring it. I really want it to be a good one. Mm-hmm. And this one, I don't see any point here of playing with that. I don't.
Yeah, I actually, you know, I think you've convinced me, because when I think about it, I don't like it. It's not even that important to me. It's just like I like drinking. Like, I like the ritual of drinking coffee in the morning and kind of starting off the workday with that.
So now for example, because I drink the coffee in the middle of the day, it's like, for me, it's like getting, you know, the second wave, you know. It's like, you know, I'm doing work, I'm here, I'm focused, so let me have some coffee to just, you know, to accompany me with this, you know. It's a feel good coffee now, right? So I like it like that.
Right, let's talk about time. The time, yeah, where you go to sleep.
Oh, don't get me started on that.
So I kind of struggle with this point, because what the author says is that our bodies naturally tend to regulate according to the circadian rhythm, such that between 10 p.m. and 2 a.m., so in those 4 hours, like, the levels of sleep hormones are at the ideal levels. So, like, you should really be sleeping during that time, you know, 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. And then before and beyond that, I mean, obviously you want to have ideally 8 hours or so of sleep, but it should be within that range. And then earlier than that, if you want, or later than that, but always within that range. What do you think of that?
As any theory, I think it's a nice one. I appreciate that it's there. But that's all I can say here, because for me, this is totally... I cannot apply this. This is no way. I mean, when we manage to put our kids to sleep around, you know, 9 p.m. or before 9 p.m., you know, and any minute before 9 p.m. is gold. Like, we can put them like around 8. This is just fantastic. Then we have a few hours to ourselves. And we don't get them in the morning. We get them then, you know, in the evening. So we try to go to bed around midnight or a little bit before midnight. But going earlier than that to sleep is just, for me, like I wouldn't want to miss these hours with my wife, you know, this evening with my wife. So, like, and this evening to myself, you know, I mean, to just, you know, be without kids, you know, kids are asleep, like, there's the house is quiet, like. It's not the same, you know, waking up earlier. Like, I've done like different experiments. I've been going to sleep earlier. I've been waking up at 5 a.m. at some point, 6 a.m. now I'm waking up at 7 a.m. and I think it's a good time for me to wake up, and I'm going to bed before midnight. So I don't get full 8 hours of sleep, but, you know, seven-ish, right? And and for me, this is fine. I mean, I this is all I get, but I just need this evening, you know? I just need it, you know? I want it.
Okay, so that's a really good explanation. I admittedly have more flexibility in my lifestyle to go to sleep earlier if I wanted to, but I don't want to. or rather, I don't wanna, you know?
I'd rather not.
Yeah. Like, it, if this theory is correct, then it kind of made me feel bad, because I could go to sleep earlier and wake up earlier, maybe as suggested, 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. or something like that. But it just sounds so early, and I don't know, I suppose it would be probably a good idea to try an experiment. Mm-hmm. Experiments are good. But I really hope that he's wrong, because it just sounds so awfully early to me.
Yeah, it does. I mean, really, I understand where he's going, you know, with that, you know, just because this is night and, you know, and whatever. But really, like, the evenings, just for me, like, I think to any adult, you know, evenings are gold. Like, you want to have this quiet, nice evening, you know, like, to yourself, or, you know, with your special someone. Of course, not to stretch it too long, like, you know, not going, you know, to 1 or 2 a.m., but because you can do that, but then, you know, you will not get lots of sleep. But really, like, I need that, and there's no way for me to change that, you know. We would have to just totally change our habits, and it wouldn't be the same. I don't think so. Well, as I said, we can experiment that, but first, I wouldn't be able to convince my wife to do it, to do this experiment.
Yeah.
And second, you know, I just, you know, I want this evening. That's it. You know, I'll have to just, you know, I hope he's wrong. If he's not wrong, I'm doing some harm to my body with that, but I'm doing everything else. I'm trying to do everything else more or less right. So I will have to just, you know, I cannot be, you know, 100% good here.
That's pretty good. So a few other remarks he made about timing is sometimes people get this rush of energy at the end of the day. And I don't have that very often, but I certainly have experienced it more than once. Like, it's like 10 p.m. or so, and you just want to do things, you know? And so, according to the author, what this rush of energy is just a difference in hormone levels that are supposed to allow your body to repair damage during sleep. And you're misusing this energy for the wrong things. So this can be experienced as a desire not to go to sleep for a while more, when in reality, that's probably what you should do. And of course, the few other things which to me were pretty clear already, which is that, you know, 8 hours or so of sleep are good. Sleep occurs in about 90-minute cycles. So, you know, about 7.5 hours is probably makes sense, because then, like, it's more likely that you won't wake up in the middle of REM sleep, which is not a pleasant feeling. And that consistency is really important, which I already know. I wake up same time every day.
Yeah, and consistency is really important. And it's I think, I mean, my experience has taught me that it's really easy to train your body to be consistent. I mean, as we mentioned in previous episodes, this year just started, and I got back to my routine, and I would wake up just after I think not even 2 weeks, waking up regularly at 7 a.m. Like, on a Saturday, I just woke up at 7 a.m. exactly, without, you know, just before the alarm clock, you know, just my body just, you know, taught itself that this is the moment to wake up, and that's it. Like, it's really and this example just tells us that if we train our body correctly, and if we train our body, you know, with good habits in mind, and especially good tips from Sleep Smarter book, yeah, we'll get good results and we'll just be better.
Yeah, my anecdotal evidence is that before I was consistent about sleep, if I wouldn't have an alarm clock, the natural time for my body to think it's the right time to wake up would be around noon, which sounds like a horrible idea. And now, like, it doesn't happen very often, but I sometimes just naturally wake up at 7:57 or something, like so close to when my alarm clock would be ringing. And I get so consistent that sometimes when I deliberately make the alarm clock ring later than usual because I went to sleep late, and I'd say, okay, like, I need at least 7 hours of sleep. So I would set it to like 9. But the last hour, I would be just waking up naturally anyway. Like, I'll go back to sleep. You need that sleep. But I would be waking up already because it's 8 a.m.
Yep.
So that, you know, that's just anecdotal evidence, but it makes sense to me.
Yeah, and what he said in the book also, which is something, again, for me, really difficult to swallow, but I think it's right, and I'm going to try doing that, is that we should also not break our sleeping patterns on the weekends.
And, yes.
And we should still consistently go at the same time to sleep on the weekends, which is not natural for us because we want to go out and things. But I think he's right. I mean, I think it just makes sense.
Well, that's part of the reason why it's difficult for me to go to sleep earlier than midnight. Mm-hmm. Like, most of the week I could, but then, you know, once or twice or three times a week, I do something fun in the evening, and then it would be difficult to actually go to sleep at that time. And if I go later, then I break the consistency, which I think is very important as well. Okay, before we wrap up, there's one thing I have to say about this book, which is that I've been quite disappointed at the end of the book, because in addition to lots of solid advice, the author started preaching pseudoscience. He talked about earthing and stuff like that. And I mean, my bullshit detector went through the roof right then and there. And I did a bunch of research because this idea of earthing and grounding, I felt like this needs some proper research.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, immediately, the source he cited, the Journal of Alternative and Complementary Medicine, the title should tell you this, but if it's not enough, I checked it, and that it's not a real scientific journal. So I looked into it more closely, and there's a bunch of papers on this. You can find them in scientific paper databases, but, you know, they're either published in stuff like this pseudoscience scientific journal, or in open access journals that are, you know, that are peer reviewed kind of, but they don't have, like, they're not vetted as for, like, if this is like actual science. And I looked at some of them more closely, and they don't look credible at all. He explains sciencey sound explanation for the mechanism in which it will work, but it doesn't make much sense in reality. I'll link to the explanation why. And the papers, they're the same few names. They don't seem to have any credible methodology. And many of them seem to be linked to, guess what, companies selling grounding mats and other BS. So as an MD, he should know better than this. And it was quite disappointing because there is a lot of stuff that makes a lot of sense and sounds like a solid, you know, he did solid research on many of this. So it kind of, it broke his credibility to me.
All right. I didn't pay attention to the last part. I read it, but it didn't. I mean, I was so focused on the practical tips and things like that I just didn't care about that. But thanks for pointing this out.